Oregon was not a very friendly place to African Americans when it was a territory, then a new state. Early Oregon's way of dealing with black people was just to exclude them from taking up residence. No slaves, no free blacks either. That beginning, and a lot of history since, explains why Oregon's black population remains very small, about 2% of the total population. Compare that to the 13% of the United States population that is African American. The story will be told in several parts of rural Oregon starting next week. The Rural Organizing Project joined forces with Oregon Humanities to present again the Oregon Conversation Project's Why Aren't There More Black People in Oregon? Jessica Campbell is with the Rural Organizing Project and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Jessica.
Hey there.
And she's joined by another community organizer, Alex Budd. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Jessica, start us off. What is the Rural Organizing Project and what's it about?
Well, the Rural Organizing Project, at its core, is a network of over 60 human dignity groups that are all autonomous throughout the state. In 35 of Oregon's 36 counties, since we're rural, we don't count Multnomah County, which is Portland. And ultimately, our goal as the Rural Organizing Project is supporting these groups in their local human dignity organizing. So, and we started up almost 23 years ago in response to ballot measure 9, which would have written into the Oregon Constitution that gays and lesbians are abnormal and perverse, and rural Oregonians really stood up and said those aren't our values. And we've been around ever since.
Was that a fairly close vote?
Well, you know, what happened is it was defeated on a state level, and then it went to, they called them Son of Nine measures, that went to different counties and different cities. And so some of those passed, some of those did not. And that's actually where ROP was most beneficial, is we connected all those communities that were trying to fight these Son of Nine measures. And that's what started ROP. It was reaffirmed that this structure was really helpful to keep isolation reduced and to keep folks sharing strategies across communities.
I remember the talk of the Son of Nine measures, and this all started when the Oregon Citizens Alliance rose to power and also became very influential in the Oregon Republican Party. That's all the same period, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, the OCA is responsible for ballot measure 9. You got it.
Human dignity groups, I mean, we can imagine what that means, but why don't you explain the concept a little further?
Well, you know, it varies. We like the phrase human dignity, and basically groups, we call all of our member groups human dignity groups because they, when they join ROP, commit to a very basic level of not oppressing other folks and respecting everyone's human dignity. But in reality, human dignity groups take on many, many forms, and we have groups that work on, you know, just issues that are on the front lines of their newspaper or are very specific. PFLAGS, for example, which is Parents and Family of Lesbians and Gays, or we have a number of groups that are led by Latino leadership in rural Oregon who are really working on ways that they can build up the Latino organizing community and talking about racial profiling and driver's cards, which is coming up in November on our ballot.
Ah, yes, so it is.
Mm-hmm. It is a wide spectrum of human dignity groups throughout the state of Oregon.
So is the Rural Organizing Project a frequent partner with Oregon Humanities? I mean, is this kind of partnership that you have with the program coming up starting next week, is that a fairly common connection between you two?
Well, we did a tour called History from Below a couple years ago, but this is the first time that we have really partnered up with them with an existing conversation project leader and kind of program that they've done in the past. So it's not a new relationship, but it is a new way that the relationship is taking shape in Oregon, which is very exciting.
And Alex Budd, let's bring you into this and explain what your connection is to the project.
Well, I'm just part of a local grassroots group of folks here in Grants Pass. Jessica and ROP hosted a conversation about 6 months ago here for community members called, you know, the basic question that we were there to address was, what do we need to still be living here in our communities 20 years from now? Which brought up a whole range of different issues and things that that folks feel are important to their wanting to stay in a place. And also, you know, a lot of the things that we felt needed to change in our community. And that's how this actual project first took shape, was we felt racial justice and our history of racism here in the area was something that needed to be addressed. And that's kind of how we here got connected with ROP, and also how we got connected with this conversation project.
All right, so the Conversation Project program is called Why Aren't There More Black People in Oregon? A Hidden History. Walida Imarisha is the leader of it, and the first stop on the tour is Grants Pass on September 4th, next Thursday at 6:30 p.m. At the Tap Rock Northwest Grill. There is a fair amount of history of issues between whites and blacks, or I guess more about black exclusion in Grants Pass, isn't there, Alex?
There is, yeah, and that's something that has been really interesting for us is just in preparing for this, digging into some of that history. It's not something that's talked about, but the Ku Klux Klan has had a presence here for years. There were sundown laws in effect that prohibited black people from staying in town after dark. The law was, you know, you had to get out of town before the sun went down or, you know, you were going to be in trouble. And there are all kinds of stories like that. But at this point, the history seems more anecdotal. And there hasn't, it's not an open conversation. It's not something that we have talked about and addressed in the community. And I think that's where we're hoping that this conversation project can start to change that. The only way to address the problem is to acknowledge that there is one. And you know, we hope that this can be the first step in doing that.
But Alex, I was curious about the verb tense you used when you talked about the Ku Klux Klan, because it's not a current issue in Grants Pass now, right?
It's not a high-profile one, but again, there's anecdotal evidence that there are still groups and still folks like that around, and that it's still active. A lot of people talk about it being an underground thing now.
All right, so that's why it needs to be talked about. It's not just a matter of history,
exactly.
It's a matter of present day as well.
Yeah, and a lot of those same currents and attitudes are still here. They just don't necessarily manifest themselves the same way. So it may not be as overt. There may not be cross-burnings that we see happening all the time. But those same attitudes are still part of the community. I was just, I think just yesterday, someone was telling me about a friend of theirs, a person of color, who was harassed and threatened in a bar here. And it's in many ways, it's more under the surface now. And, you know, that means we don't see it, we don't talk about it, but that doesn't mean it's any less harmful or that it's going away or, you know, isn't a problem anymore.
We're talking to Alex Budd and Jessica Campbell here on the Jefferson Exchange about black history in Oregon. They'll be involved with the bringing of this roadshow from Oregon Humanities Conversation Project. Why aren't there more black people in Oregon? A Hidden History, again, coming to Grants Pass, the first of six stops on this tour. That'll be September 4th, next Thursday at 6:30 at the Tap Rock Northwest Grill, sponsored by the Illinois River Valley Arts Council. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Let's talk about black history in Oregon. 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Bill and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, I just, thanks for having me. I have a little point of interest. Racism in Oregon goes really far back. I believe a military governor of the territory, his name was Lane. He might have been a political elected official, but his name was Lane, and that's what Lane County is named after.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a racist. He was actually the vice president under Jefferson Davis during the Civil War.
Yeah, long history with Joseph Lane. Yeah, so
I thought I'd bring that up, showing how racist we were going that far back.
Okay, appreciate that, Bill. Thanks for bringing that up to our attention again. And so, Jessica, the history, do you find a lot of people shocked by the discussion of Oregon's history with African Americans?
You know, I think there's a lot of people. You know, I travel around the state for my job. And when we are talking to groups about things like hate crimes or racial profiling or things like that, a lot of folks will say, well, you know what, that's interesting, but, you know, this county or Oregon is so white, we don't need to talk about race. And when you dig in a little bit deeper and talk about, well, actually, why are there so few people, especially African-American folks, in Oregon? Could it actually be the legacy of all of these discriminatory policies? That's where people start to really go, you know, we get it. And I think one of the beautiful things about Oregon's history is we actually do have a strong history of resistance to some of these policies and to the KKK. I mean, the KKK or the Aryan Brotherhood tried creating a headquarters in Josephine County outside of Grants Pass in 98. And in fact, the entire community in many ways came together. There were 1,000 people on the street marching against it, and ultimately they decided that Josephine County wasn't where they wanted to be. And back in 2005, they tried doing the same thing in Grant County around John Day. They wanted to move in, and the community actually came together and very strongly said, we do not hold those values. We do not have the same values. this is not going to be your hometown. And ultimately, they decided to back off. And so that's also a piece of hidden history that we really are excited to bring out. There are ways that Oregonians have directly confronted what is going on and actually have been successful.
Let us take a call. We have Mark and Redding on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Oregon's black history with Jessica Campbell and Alex Budd.
Good morning. Yes, between 85 and 95, I lived in northeast Alberta in Portland, and at that time, the place was, you know, something like Crack Alley. When I first moved there, you'd see people waving little bags of white powder at you as you drove up the street. Then one day, one of them was found dead in the on Swan Island with a hole through his brain. And from that afternoon on, there was no more dealing on the street in northeast Portland. All I could ever figure was that some police officer had taken it upon himself to do this. I don't know, of course. It was just my thought. At any rate, that neighborhood was quite run down. On northeast Alberta, almost all the buildings were boarded up. And then they decided to gentrify it. I was one of the first people evicted from there so that they could turn it into the beautiful, almost all-white neighborhood it is today.
All right,
and
thanks.
And the black people that moved out moved to the northeast suburbs.
All right, thanks for the story, Mark. Appreciate you sharing that with us. And this is not a story unusual to you, I would think, Jessica?
No, it absolutely is not. You know, it's really been interesting because you can go throughout, and even in Eugene, you know, there's a higher concentration of Latino families in Eugene. And, you know, that goes back to history, too, where actually there were regulations on where families of color could live. And that happened in Portland. Black folks could only live in certain parts of Portland. Latino families could only live certain places in West Eugene. And you can talk to folks who remember, you know, it's not because they love West Eugene. That is where they could, that's the only place that they could live in town because of the racially exclusive laws in place.
So the choices of places to take this tour, and there are six different cities you're hitting. It's Grants Pass, Redmond, Astoria, and it's all in a row, six straight days, Albany, Newport, and Bay City. Are these places that all, like Grants Pass, have some history with racism?
Absolutely. They all have different manifestations of it today as well, which, you know, will be really exciting to see communities dig into it. And as Alex really said, you know, right now this conversation is pretty quiet. And I think we're in a moment with Ferguson on the headlines, you know, where we're talking about black youth being shot. And the community outcry to that shooting, to that murder, and then the police backlash, you know, this is really bringing this conversation up about what is happening in our communities right now. What does it actually look like in a way that hasn't been talked about, honestly, in a while? So it's really exciting that we're going to all these places and we're going to be able to really kind of map out where things are at and what it's looking like for folks in these communities.
So again, this Conversation Project program, the title is Why Aren't There More Black People in Oregon? A Hidden History, has been out on the road before. Did it miss all these places the first time through?
No, actually, it's pretty exciting. Walida is actually coming back to some communities a second and third time because of this project, because of this tour. And what makes this a little bit different is we are actually, as the Rural Organizing Project, we are following up with an organizing conversation. So Walida is going to give her presentation and and facilitate the conversations that really dig into the history, into some of the organizing that resisted policies, particularly from black leadership. And then ROP, either through our human dignity groups or through ROP staff, we're going to facilitate conversations about, you know, we just learned some really interesting stuff. We talked about how it's manifesting itself today. Now we have a responsibility to figure out what we do now. And how do we create that vision of long-term justice in our communities? What are the obstacles to that? And how can we start organizing and experimenting around removing those and overcoming those obstacles? So that's, you know, Grants Pass, Astoria, these folks have hosted Walida before, but that's the little twist we're bringing. And then there are certainly some new communities on this list who have never had this conversation before.
Black History in Oregon, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jessica Campbell from the Rural Organizing Project and Alex Budd, a community organizer in the Grants Pass area, where this tour will stop first on Thursday, September 4th. Join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We haven't mentioned it yet. The exclusion law, the black exclusion law, actually stayed on the Oregon books until 1926, I believe. And Alex Budd, when this comes to Grants Pass, I imagine one of the major issues is not so much to get the people who probably most need to see this program to attend it, but how you motivate the people who do to go out and talk to those people. Is that the general approach?
Yeah, and that's definitely an interesting question. You know, the folks sometimes that most need to hear something are those who are most resistant to hearing it in that way. But that's not something I'm too worried about. I mean, this is... addressing racism and racial justice here isn't, you know, that's certainly not going to happen with one presentation. This has to be a long-term project, and it's something that we as a community have to work on. And I think what can happen out of this, you know, we bring people together, and those people are all, for this presentation, they all have friends, they all have neighbors here. And I guess we see ourselves more as trying to start the conversation at this point. And, you know, you start talking to anyone who will listen, and then, you know, we're hoping from there to go further as we, you know, I'm really excited about the follow-up conversation that Jessica mentioned as well, where we can, you know, talk about not only how do we as individuals and as a community relate to this history, but what's our response to it, and what are we going to do about it now? I think at this point that's where we are. It's more than, you know, just trying to jump into changing everything right away. Obviously, we want to do as much as we can, as quickly as we can, but starting the conversation for us is the first thing that needs to happen. We're hoping that this can be a community conversation, and in that way we can start to engage everyone. Because we think, you know, for people to change attitudes and behaviors and for attitudes and behaviors throughout the county and throughout our institutions here, things like the school board, for those to change, it's going to have to come not just from a single presentation or something. It's going to have to come from our whole community. From friends and families and neighbors standing up and speaking out. And that's what we're hoping to start here.
Jessica Campbell, tell us a little bit about the presenter, Walida Imarisha, and the general structure of the evening. It's an hour and a half, I see, or generally that's how much time is allotted? Oh, 2 hours, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walida is a really well-respected professor and educator and organizer. She's worked throughout the state. She teaches at PSU. She's taught at OSU. She might be currently teaching at OSU. And, you know, she teaches really facilitates organizers thinking and capacity building. I mean, she really works with folks, training folks across the state in how to do effective community organizing, which is really exciting for an organization like ROP, where, you know, our whole goal is to make sure that organizations on the ground, all volunteer outfits, can really get as much support as they can. And what the project ends up looking like is she has a timeline of Oregon history that she puts up around the walls, and she encourages people to kind of walk through and see the different parts of Oregon's history, which, you know, you mentioned it was in the Oregon Constitution that black folks actually couldn't live in Oregon. There are sundown laws, and she includes information on the sundown laws in the Rogue Valley in particular, for example. So you go through this timeline, and she then facilitates small group discussions in the room so people can kind of digest what they saw, what struck them, what was interesting, and it kind of goes from there. And that presentation is about 90 minutes, and then we're going to follow up with that organizing conversation that's only going to be, you know, half an hour, but more small group conversation about what is our long-term vision for our community. What do we really want our communities to be looking like? What are the obstacles to making that happen? And what are some ways, just brainstorming some ways, that maybe we can begin to address that? And in Grants Pass, for example, there's already a follow-up meeting that has been organized that people are going to be invited to really go through the brainstorms in a meaningful way and figure out what the next steps are. So that's kind of the structure that's been modeled around the state. 90 minutes of the conversation project and then 30 minutes of really sitting down and digging in and figuring out how it applies locally.
And have those conversations been very different from town to town?
Well, you know, just in my experience, we haven't done this with Walida. So it's going to be an experiment to see how it works after Walida's presentation, though we've heard plenty of people say, I left Walida's presentation trying to figure out what I do locally. But certainly when we have those conversations as ROP, just come to town to say, you know, Alex mentioned we facilitated a conversation in Grants Pass that was, what do you need to have in your community for you to stay 20 years from now? And that does vary in how it manifests itself. You know, communities that are really struggling, they're going to mention, I wish I had access to higher education where I live. I would need a university here. But I think the bottom line is, across the state that we've heard overwhelmingly, is that people want to live fully in their communities with safety and dignity. And safety is a big one. And that's what we're talking about right now. You know, are people of color safe?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, this, there's a, probably a greater sense of urgency to deliver this after Ferguson and some of the other shootings around the country as well. And is Walida equipped to facilitate that part of the discussion?
Yeah, she is. And then the thing is that we are asking our local leaders to really step up, because they're the ones who live in these communities, and they're the ones who are going to follow through with a lot of the organizing. So it's actually going to be local folks who facilitate that last conversation that Walida will participate in. But it's going to be local communities really kind of taking the reins and moving it from there, which is exciting.
All right, so again, in Grants Pass on September 4th, Thursday at 6:30 p.m. at the Tap Rock Northwest Grill on Southeast 6th Street. For folks in the Willamette Valley, it'll come to the Albany Public Library in Albany on September 7th at 4 p.m. I want to thank Jessica Campbell from the Rural Organizing Project for joining us, and thank Alex Budd, a community organizer from Grants Pass, for joining us as well. Thank you both for coming to the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you both. We'll make sure we put the full slate of dates up on our Facebook page and website later in the day. So again, thank you, and that'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour number two coming up. We'll move from the heavy subject of black relations in Oregon to poems by kittens. That's hour number two of the Jefferson Exchange coming up.